Well, I do understand that doing a sermon on song is like doing a dance about sculpture. There's a certain kind of tension involved when you're putting what music means into words without the music. But music, despite my really almost encyclopedic lack of talent, has been a driving force of my life. And all kinds of music have meant the world to me, inspiring me when I was down, making me feel joined in an effort. It has nourished me, calmed me, inflamed me. All of this comes to mind right now and fits so nicely with the revolution, because I was watching the Martin Luther King Day celebration at the White House. And I'm sitting watching television and watching all of these wonderful stars performing to President Barack Obama. And these figures from the 60s are taking me back to the 60s. And I started to cry. I started to cry partially out of sadness that instead of living in the 60s, I'm living in my 60s. That's kind of a jolt. Partially out of sadness because so many people who were on this journey with me are not here to see that day, that happy day, when there is a black man with a Muslim name in the American White House. I have to tell you that in the streets of Berkeley, in the streets of Torrance and Palos Verdes, where at various times I was hassled and arrested, spat on, epithets and literally spat on, I didn't really believe that we would come this far within my lifetime. That was my failure of vision. I acted, even though I wasn't tremendously optimistic, the importance of issues of justice and peace were so important that I felt that we had to act without a guarantee of success. That we have come so far was marvelous. But I could have foreseen a black president someday, maybe not within my lifetime. What I couldn't foresee was Joan Baez and Bob Dylan at the White House. There were no drugs in the 60s that would have allowed me to believe that some president of the United States would say, well, Joan Baez and Bob Dylan would be really good guests here in the White House, and that they would accept. This was not something that was going to work at any level, as I honestly reflected, and again, it's my failure of vision, because there they were, singing. There's a line that the revolution will not be televised. It's not true. The revolution was televised, and it had a soundtrack. And the soundtrack did not simply accompany the revolution. The soundtrack drove it. It was music that picked us up when we were down, that took our disparate voices and created harmony, that made us feel that we were in this thing together. It was remarkable. It was remarkable to hear that music again. Dylan wrote, "The line it is drawn and the curse it is cast, the slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past, the order is rapidly fading. The first ones now will later be last, for the times they are a-changing." And the times did change. We went a very long way to get to this moment. I have always, as those of you who are regulars know, been an optimist. I believe that our power and our passion and our commitment can stop wars, can make brother and sister reach out to one another, to help us change how we see our brothers and sisters of all races, religions, ethnicities, and sexualities. I believe that our efforts make a difference, that our world is not too great, not too complex to be changed by people of passion and goodwill. I have always believed, along with Anne Frank, that while there is evil in the world, that is an action, it is something that is done, and sometimes evil is inaction, it is something that we refuse to do, that most people are basically good at heart. And most of us want our days to count for something. Art, music, poetry, dance, even sermons have the power to change the world, to open up minds, to open up hearts, to give us encouragement and energy. That's why art is so subversive. We laugh at a joke because it bypasses our censors. We are joined together in song because we don't necessarily think about it. We let it move us to becoming part of something greater than the sum of its parts. When we join together in song, however the number of keys we sing in at any given time, and they are incidentally infinite, we can create music. It could be dissonance, but when enough of us join our voices, there is a buzz, a sense of belonging, a sense that we are creating something together, and then off we can march. It has power. It has power to soothe the savage breast and to inflame it. I spent much of my youth working in coffee houses as a comedian and as a master of ceremonies. I worked with a lot of acts that went nowhere, and I've joined them on that trip. Not that this is nowhere. We just saw Crazy Heart, and no bowling alleys have been played. Although I've come very close to the Bongo Lounge and the Purple Turk in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when Albuquerque was two blocks either side of you know the Purple Turk in Albuquerque, or you've just been in its analog. I understand. Hey, Vinny, can you turn down the slot? Anyway. But I worked with some acts that became, well, probably known to you. Janis Joplin. She was a very, incidentally, when I worked with her, she was a very nice girl. She was not at all the image that you have of her. This was 1962 in Northern California. I worked in the Troubadour, in the Ash Grove, in the Purple Turk, carrying on the theme, a place called the Purple Couch. The Balladeer, which closed its doors and became the New Balladeer, which was very much like the Balladeer, except they hadn't paid their bills. I worked at the top of the Tangent in Palo Alto and Coffee and Confusion in North Beach. I worked with the Smothers Brothers, with Buffy St. Marie, who just brought me out of my seat with her passion, with all different kinds of wonderful acts. And I name them not to show off, because I am, after all, of the least renowned of anyone that I've mentioned, including Josh White, Josh White Jr., Oscar Brown Jr. I mention them because they changed my life. And because they changed my life, I was able to touch other people's lives, their insights, their poetry, their music, their passion, their courage. It took courage to sing for civil rights. It took courage to oppose a war machine and speak and sing against a war. It took courage to sing lyrics in our hymns today that allude to both gay and lesbian sexuality. Back in 1960s, that was no small thing, and it made a difference. And their courage make a difference. And they still make a difference to me. I remember, I have independent recollection of a night that I'm working in the Troubadour, and Josh White is singing a song that I never heard called Strange Fruit. And he was a wonderful guitarist, but he puts down his guitar and he sings a cappella, and I'm not at all ready for what I'm about to hear. The words are written by Abel Maripol, a name you may recognize because he was the person that adopted the Rosenbergs' orphaned children. Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves, blood at the root, black body swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging by the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South, the bulging eyes, the twisted mouth, scent of magnolias sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is fruit for crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for trees to drop. Here is a strange and a bitter crop. That touched my heart in ways that political argument couldn't, in ways that polemic couldn't. That is the force of art, of poetry, of song, of people and voices and hearts and spirits being joined together. That is the soundtrack of a revolution that was telecast and broadcast and recorded and sung. Then there's my favorite musical moment of the civil rights revolution. The moment when an old religious song that was used to keep people quiet, a song of quietude, don't work, don't upset the donkey cart, Don't worry about making it in this life. If you're poor, if you're oppressed, if you suffer, God will give you your reward in the next generation. So the old pre-civil rights song was, the devil, he has a slippery shoe. You don't watch out, he'll slip it on you. Keep your hand on the plow. Hold on. But in the civil rights movement, it was, the devil, he has a slippery shoe. You don't watch out, he'll slip it on you. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. And that song of oppression became an anthem of action. A simple change of lyric brought people together with a sense of what was right and what was important about this life. It is not true that all religion just sings to people, oh, it's another land, it's another time, it's another dimension that you will live in paradise. No, the civil rights movement was filled with religious, with Catholic priests, with rabbis, with Unitarian ministers, one of whom, James Reed, died, and others of whom were beaten as freedom riders. That was filled with religious people who showed up to be dragged away, to be handcuffed, to be spat on, to be rejected, to have all kinds of things happen to us. And we were there because there was an insight that it was right, that we are one. that we are not different species, bound on different journeys to different ends. We are people sharing this moment and sharing this planet. There was a song, and we don't have the lyrics in our hymnal, but we do have the music, and it's called The Black National Anthem. And listen to it. Although I've cut the last verse out for time, the last verse was part of the invocation for Obama's inauguration. It's by James Weldon Jones. February 19th, it was sung for the first time in public, 1900, for Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound as the rolling sea. Sing a song of faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. Yet, with a steady beat, have not our weary feet come to the place from where our fathers sighed. We have come over a way that with tears have been watered. We have come treading a path through the blood and the slaughter. Out of the gloomy past, till now we stand at last where the white gleam of our bright star has cast. Wow. When we heard that, when we were down, it made us believe. It made us believe because it was not a song about something that had been accomplished. It was a song and a commitment. It was not waiting to be rescued. It was not waiting for a government in Washington. It was not waiting for a Messiah on high. It was a call and a commitment to make a difference for justice for this nation, as we understood it. And yet when we were down, and we did get down, because when you are in the moment, when you are in the struggle, it's hard to see the progress. It's hard to feel the progress. When you hear the criticism, whether it's from a parent or an authority figure or a newscaster or the good common wisdom of the editorial page of a conservative newspaper, or from the President of the United States, or from congressmen and senators that said, just you wait, you're all wrong, don't disturb the mess, all of these things will come if you just wait. When we were down, when wars wouldn't end, when hatred would not abate even for a little bit, there was the balm. B-A-L-M, bomb. There was, we shall overcome. I remember hearing at the Troubadour, no, I'm sorry, at the Ash Grove, when I was emceeing a Corps benefit, Odetta singing it. And when she said, deep in my heart, I do believe, that voice, that sound, that song, that promise, that pledge, still reverberates inside my soul. Such is the power of song. Such is the power of a voice. Such is the power of courage to open us, to fill us, to heal us, to move us in a direction where we want to go. I do believe we shall overcome someday. I do not believe we have overcome. I do not believe that the struggle is ended and we can sing joy, songs of joy about our arrival in some promised land. But we have come a mighty distance. a distance that I didn't really realize in its increments until I sat there and looked and listened and felt what was going on in the White House that night. The civil rights movement, the peace movement were bridged in my generation in the 60s, led by Dr. King, who did not give up on civil rights or believe that civil rights had been accomplished before moving on and opening up where he saw other areas of injustice to our nation, to the poor, to minorities, and to non-minorities. And he bridged it with the anti-war movement, as did Joan Baez with her strong conviction for peace and nonviolence, where she risked not simply her career, but her life to her beliefs. Now, whether one agrees or not, the issue of her courage, Dr. King's courage, Bob Dylan, bridging those two issues and bringing my generation together and out onto the streets. Simple questions sometimes just outdo complex arguments. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? I don't know if all of you understand this, particularly the younger people, but black people weren't called men in those days. Black men were often referred to as boys. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? And then bridging the issues in one verse. And how many times must a cannonball fire before it's forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The winds of change, the winds that carried tear gas, the winds of a society, whatever it was blowing in the wind, and we could smell freedom in the air, and we could let it fill us with a sense of hope and dedication. There were also angrier anthems that were not kind of simple questions. There was the night that Buffy St. Marie brought me out of my seat the first time I ever heard Universal Soldier. He is the Universal Soldier, and he is to blame. He'll kill you for me and me for you, my friend. And it didn't make it some distant guy in Washington, and it didn't make it some other bad guy. It brought the responsibility down to individual conscience and what it was that we could do to make a difference, and to understand also the difficulty and the danger of choosing to make a difference. There was the religious words, the prophetic words of Bob Dylan that were filled with rage. And I think rage was a stage that we had to go through because this was serious stuff. We were being beaten. Some of our friends were dying in civil rights. Some of our friends were dying in Vietnam. And however you felt about it, it was life and death stuff. Dylan sang in Masters of War, "Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A war can be won, you want me to believe. But I see through your eyes, I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. How much do I know to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's one thing I know, though I'm younger than you, that not even Jesus would forgive what you do." We had to hear Dylan. We had to hear the rage. It's a natural step of moral evolution so that later, our force spent, we could hear John Lennon, "All we are asking is give peace a chance. All we are asking is give peace, a chance. Yeah, I cried at that White House concert. I cried at the distance that we have come, at how much we have overcome. Some goals have come sooner than I expected, and I celebrate them. Some goals have receded, and I'm appalled. I never thought that we would not have an equal rights amendment, but that was my view from Berkeley in the 60s. It seemed self-evident. It was within our grasp. What happened? I never imagined that we would be litigating Darwin and the theory of evolution in 2010. What the hell happened? I never imagined that fundamentalist religion would become such a divisive and labeling and libeling force in our modern society. I didn't dream of it. I went to school in Berkeley with fundamentalists of all faiths, and we worked together and we marched together, and sometimes we marched separately but came home together. And I never dreamed that we would be as broken and fractured in some ways as we are now as a society. I also never dreamed when I did my first gay union in 1969 that there would be a window, a happy window, when I could do legal same-sex marriages. And then I never dreamed that the window would close. Never occurred to me that 40 years later there was so much love in the world that we thought we could throw a bunch of it out and just ignore it. Never seemed to me that that was the biggest surplus problem that we had in our lives. As I looked back that night, as I watched, listened, felt that wonderful, wonderful evening at the White House, my optimism returned. I didn't realize how far really we had come. I hadn't thought about it until in that moment, looking back at the songs of the revolution, at the songs of my youth, that I understood that we have come a very long way. That I understood that our actions then, our actions now, make a difference even when it doesn't feel like it at the time. Even when we would be weary and pull back from the engagement because it just looks too hard and too complicated. That if we let our actions be informed by our values, we give ourselves a chance at making a more goodly nation and a more goodly world. That if we examine our values and what we mean to each other as human beings, and how we see and find and build the love in each other, that we give our world, this moment, a chance. Our actions do not guarantee success. Our courage is not a mark of our absence of fear. Our courage is when we act even though it's not politically correct. It's not easy to do. We are risking things when we take chances for our stands on what we think of as justice. I hear all of those songs in my head. I hear all of those songs in my heart. And as Kennedy said in accepting the torch has been passed to a new generation. And now it's my turn. Not to stop singing. I'm sorry, that's bad news for many of you. But I will continue singing. But I will believe that enough dissonance creates harmony. But it is now another generation that takes the torch to sing the song to bring up the daylight of a new time, of a new America. We need new songs for a new age, because in the words of Oscar Brown Jr., we have still got so terrible long to go.